What's up, family? You are tuned into Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. From KPFA Radio and the Pacifica Network, I'm your host, Kat Brooks.
Kat Brooks is off for the rest of the week. I am Brian Edwards-Tiekert, trying to fill some very big shoes. Our next guest has been writing about an AI product put out by the manufacturer of tasers and body cameras that uses body camera audio to write police reports. David Moss is director of investigations at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, where he researches and writes about surveillance technology and digital rights. Thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here.
Why don't you start by describing how Axon markets this product to police departments? It's called Draft One.
So Draft One is marketed as a time saver for law enforcement. You know, as you could probably imagine, paperwork takes up a lot of time for many of our jobs. For law enforcement, that means writing police reports, writing a narrative of what happened when you went to go investigate something or respond to a 911 call or you arrested somebody. And that takes time writing up these reports. So the idea here from Axon is that you feed the body-worn audio into their system, you hit a button, and a generative AI listens to the audio and writes up your report for you. And then all you have to do is go through it, fill in some blanks like it's a Mad Lib, and then you're done. And theoretically, that, you know, saves a bunch of time that you could be doing other things in policing. That isn't always the case at how it works out, but that's the general pitch, is that this is a time saver for law enforcement.
In terms of the actual mechanism, it's not working from the visual footage, just the audio?
Just the audio, like no visual whatsoever. And in fact, you know, Axon is actually recommending changing police practices to make the system work better. They tell police, you should just narrate everything you see. You should just verbally say your observations as you go along, because that will help the AI better generate a narrative. And it's just funny to think that we're moving into a period where police are going to be doing things differently day to day to make the computer work better, rather than having the computer improve to better serve the officer and, you know, public safety in general.
And the Axon product also doesn't have context. When it's drafting a report, it doesn't know why someone was called out for that report.
No, it doesn't have a lot of information whatsoever. It has what's on audio.
So as someone who thinks about new technologies and their social implications, what are your principal concerns here?
Well, I mean, I feel like we live in a time where we are surprised every day by generative AI mistakes. And it's hard to say, hey, Dave, you know, do you expect Grok to become Mecha Hitler tomorrow? No, I'm not predicting a major generative AI is going to start describing itself as Mecha Hitler. So when we're dealing with this stuff, it's hard for me to even, I don't even know if my brain is capable of imagining all of the problems that are going to evolve from this. It's just untested, and everything seems really surprising from day to day with generative AI. Now, of the things that I, you know might come up, well, you know, it may just fundamentally change how police reports are written. You know, they are going to be giving a different kind of police report that is based solely on audio, and audio never tells the whole story, but that'll end up becoming the norm. It enforces a culture of laziness in law enforcement that, you know, law enforcement is signing, you know, police officer uses this, they sign a disclosure saying this is an accurate representation of my recollection, when it is in fact not. Like, it is not. It is a transcription of audio. The officer is not necessarily recollecting everything that occurred on audio. He's not retaining everything that he was said. And, you know, some of the things he visually might have seen may have had a bigger part of his recollection. It's just sort of encouraging them to, like, think less analytically and outsource this thinking to a algorithm. Perhaps one of the most dangerous things here is what happens is when there's a mistake made by the system, or a police report comes out that has a blanket, like a total fabrication in there, or some abusive language or inappropriate language. And the question becomes, did the AI write it? Or did the officer write it? Because if the officer lied, that's a big deal. If the officer just didn't review the transcript well enough, well, maybe that's a little bit of a lower disciplinary issue. But since Draft One does not keep the original draft written by AI that just vanishes into the ether, erasing that element of the paper trail, we'll just never know who is responsible for what in a system.
So it gives any police officer plausible deniability if something that they signed off on in their police report later turns out to be false, say, when they're being cross-examined during a prosecution.
Oh, exactly. It gives plausible deniability, you know, across the board when it comes to these police reports, whether it's something wrong or not. But I mean, if we look over a period of time and you start to see that there's certain kind of language that is being used to describe brown people versus white people, you know, is that an algorithmic problem or is that a human problem? I think if before draft one, we could look at these police reports and we could say, hey, you're using specific language that appears to be racially charged when you're doing these arrests. If the AI is doing it, who's to blame for that? Who do we hold accountable for that?
You know, a defender of the technology might say, at the end of the drafting process, the human police officer signs off on the report, regardless of how much of it was drafted by an AI and how much of it was modified by the human. At the end of the day, they're taking accountability for the content. So what's the concern with how they actually got there?
I mean, are they taking accountability for it, or are they just saying, well, I made an honest mistake, I didn't read it closely enough, versus, you know, I, you know, made a serious error here. And when you're doing this over and over and over again, and you see officers spending mere minutes reviewing this, like there's no way they could have listened to the audio again and verified that it was true. They're just rubber stamping it. Writ large across thousands of police reports, I mean, we're talking about it like massive accountability problems at a level that no public defender, you know, office, no independent researchers are going to be able to actually assess in a meaningful way. It just sort of results in a systemic problem.
I mean, the other possibility is that the AI could actually be making police reports better. It's not like they're a written medium that is widely known for its meticulous attention to detail and fidelity to truth. Isn't there a possibility that having this kind of generative AI transcription engine is actually an aggregate creating more faithful accounts of what police stops look like?
I mean, let's like just to sort of follow that train of thought, right? So that raises some other questions. So number one, it only handles English. So let's say it is this wonderful thing that results in better justice for everybody, for the police and the suspects and the victims and the witnesses. That benefit is only available to English speakers. That means anybody who speaks any other language is getting a totally different tier of justice. So that's a problem right there. You know, maybe it does, you know, describe things in more detail. I've looked at some of these police reports and they include all kinds of information that is really doesn't seem very germane to a particular investigation. So I was looking at one that was from the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office in Florida. They do not use draft one for criminal cases. They're only allowed to use it for cases in which nobody was arrested. So these are often what you might consider 5150 in California, you know, a mental health check, you know, hospitalization, responding to a domestic violence case, you know, that kind of thing. And so there's this one I was looking at that was a teenage girl had passed a note saying she was contemplating suicide in her class. And the officer comes to visit her. The draft one report goes into extreme detail about this juvenile's, like, you know, mental problems. I mean, what I'm talking about is like, it gives like, you know, she was upset today because she got a 63 on a homework assignment. No police officer is including the exact grade that this student got on a paper in their police report. But draft one, because it's being extremely literal, did. And the officer is not going to take the time to delete extraneous information because that's more work. That undermines the whole point of it. The more time you put into fixing it, that, you know, undermines the point of using it altogether. But I look at this report and I'm like, well, how many reports are including an immense amount of information that is unnecessary, particularly in some states where there are no privacy protections for this? We were given this particular report not very well redacted. We had to redact it ourselves before releasing it because it had a lot of information about a minor and that minor's mental health that was overly documented by draft one. And I say I assume it was overly documented by draft one because, again, we have no idea what was written by the officer and what was written by the AI.
Your principal concern here is that the technology is fundamentally unauditable. Axon, the company that built draft one, does not preserve the AI-generated draft, so you can't compare them to the final output to see how much police are actually modifying them before they submit a report.
That is one of, like, two major problems. That's the first problem. The second problem is, by default, there is no way to create a list of all police reports that use draft one. So there's not even, like, unless your agency has done some customization to the system, you can't go in and say, show me all police reports written with AI. I want to do an audit of all 100 of them to see if there's any trends across how these have been used. There's just, like, it's intentionally hit. Axon has the ability to look at all reports using its product, but law enforcement agencies don't.
Do we know how many law enforcement agencies are using it at present?
Not really. So we've identified a few dozen that have purchased it, some of whom have used it, some of them are going to be using it in the future. I would say that I would estimate less than 100 at this point. However, thousands and thousands of agencies use some Axon products, whether that's body-worn cameras, tasers, evidence management systems called evidence.com. They've got thousands and thousands of clients. And what Axon does is it tries to bundle these things together. Hey, you've bought tasers, you've bought body-worn cameras. You know, for a little bit extra, we can throw in our AI bundle, which gives you, you know, transcription services in draft one. We expect them to kind of get a whole bunch of agencies to upgrade this across the board, across the country very quickly.
The big picture question I had going through your report is this is being pitched as a labor-saving device to police departments. Are there records of any police department anywhere saying this is saving us so much time we can shrink our payroll and save the taxpayers some money?
No, absolutely not. That never is the case. Across all technologies, they're often saying this is a force multiplier. We're going to be able to, like, you know, one officer is going to have the power of 30 with, you know, this technology. You never see this technology resulting in shrinking the workforce. And if it did, let me tell you, if it looked like this was going to supersede the roles of police officers and result in reduction, you would see the very powerful police unions across the country come out and tank it immediately. And in fact, when you look at, like, Vallejo, they had a different kind of program where they were using generative AI and AI to analyze body-worn camera audio to determine whether officers were acting inappropriately. And sure enough, it found that inappropriate language is being used, and the union came in and got that software tanked.
So kind of the impact of tools are always partly a question of who has discretion over how they get used.
Yeah. I'm very curious. I would love to hear from, frontline police officers about the impact of this because, you know, with the idea of, like, well, you're going to be spending less time writing police reports. Writing police reports is safe time, right? Like, that is safe time where you are not in the line of duty. You are getting a break to sit down and write out your police report. I'm very curious of whether long term this is going to result in officers being put in more stressful situations because they're going to have to be out on the street longer each day because they're spending less time doing police reports.
I guess I have a technical question. Why aren't the generative AI products like this one, First Draft, processing the video part of police footage? Is it because it just takes too much processing power?
I have no idea. I don't know why they made that decision. I mean, the audio, I think it's possibly part of it is that they already have a piece of software that is automatically transcribing audio. And then, you know, once you have the text, like, already transcribed, then the generative AI can take that and write something based off of the already written text. I think it's, like, the big difference. So if you look at the, you know, two of the different kinds of generative AI. Like you have the large language models that are writing text. You say, hey, can you write a grocery list for me? Hey, can you write a poem in the style of Robert Frost, but about McDonald's? It can do that, right? Because it's writing text. But you ask it to make a poster. Like I saw one from a local library advertising Ice Cream Week. And somebody had asked generative AI to make a poster for Ice Cream Week. And almost everything was misspelled in it because it's a different process. It's not separating the text and the image. It's just making an image that thinks like this is what a sign should look like. And these are the kind of letters that we seem to have. And so I think that there's a lot more complexity with analyzing visuals and trying to distinguish meanings and what's happening from in visuals that just makes it like that. That is the sort of thing that would result in far, far more errors in the system.
But they also have more evidentiary value. Like a police officer can be lying into their microphone while they manhandle someone, but the footage of the cameras pointed the right direction is still going to show you putting someone in a chokehold or a prone position or whatever.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And it's unclear that whether it records as fact something somebody said. If I say, you hit me, is it recording that? Will it write that down as a suspect hit me, or will it record it as the officer said the suspect hit me? I want to also add that like one of the other problems is like, we have particularly in California, there is a huge diversity of slang in terms of the way people talk and the way words have meaning that, you know, these AI models are just not well suited to deal with. So, you know, if I say like, if I'm holding a sandwich and I'm like, this is the bomb, like, is AI going to know that I've just described this sandwich as really, really awesome? Or is it going to interpret it as I have admitted to holding an explosive device in my hands? These are some of the problems that we worry. I mean, that's an extreme example, but these are the things we worry about. I mean, if in talking to you, you know, we have a conversation and as you're saying something, I'm going, to acknowledge that I'm listening to you, is an AI going to interpret that affirmative as me agreeing with you, which are two different things. I just don't think that this technology is really well suited for the intricacies of human communication, particularly in high stress situations such as police encounters.
So the basic auditability concern you raised, that the technology does not save a revision history that would let people like you see how actual police officers are actually using the technology, that seems like a feature that would be trivially easy to incorporate. Do we know why Axon hasn't included that as a feature of its product?
Axon has publicly said they did this intentionally to save their lawyers' headaches. They've done it intentionally to avoid this kind of disclosure. Like they've specifically said that. And you know, we were very shocked to see it actually, you know, the quiet part said out loud, but it was said at a conference specifically for police leaders where they're like, yeah, we don't keep that because we don't want to have there be this additional record that you have to deal with, which would be alarming. I would add, though, in California, we can't even get the police reports themselves. Those are exempted under the Public Records Act. So even if we didn't want to see the original and we just wanted to analyze police records before Axon draft one and police records after, we can't. That's exempted under the Public Records Act.
Some of them would still become public records during prosecutions or court proceedings, though.
Sure, but not at mass. Like, I mean, you know, you look at, you know, when we got records back from the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office, just for non-criminal cases since for 3 months, they had 3,000 reports. And so when you have that many coming through, you do want to do a large-scale analysis of it. You don't want to just, like, look at five and compare five that came out through court proceedings, because most police reports do not result in court proceedings. Like, people either plead out or the cases are dropped or it's just a citation. You know, there's all sorts of things that happen. And I think that, you know, when you look at various legislation over the years where police, you know, and the Attorney General's office have to review, stop cards to identify racial bias, you have to do that in mass. You have to do that on a large scale. You have to do a data project to find out if there's some systematic injustice going on.
All right. David Moss, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Law and Disorder, a podcast where we expose the cracks in our system, agitate for resistance, and collectively build a new world in which all of us can thrive. That's it for this episode, family. You can find more information about topics and guests in this episode's show notes. Law and Disorder is produced at KPFA. That's listener-supported radio on the Pacifica Network. The show is produced by Jesse Strauss and hosted by me, Kat Brooks. Our theme music was composed by Steve Raskin of Fort Knox 5. If you like what you heard, please follow us on social media at Law and Dis, that's D-I-S, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to holler at us about something you heard or send us a show idea at lawanddisorder@kpfa.org. You can also find our content live at 8 a.m. weekdays on KPFA. That's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area. Our show and all of KPFA's programs are funded exclusively by you, the listener. And if you're in a position to support us, please donate today at kpfa.org. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. We all we got, fam.